Welcome to Season 3, Episode 11 of Swift Over Coffee. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Michaela Karen.
In this episode, we discuss why you should go to conferences and meetups.
People will love to talk about themselves, or they love to talk about their own app. So you can always ask people, what is it that you're working on?
We share your best moments in your careers.
Obviously, the money's great, but it's not about the actual income, at least not initially. You're like, damn, this has worked. Plus,
I'm a podcaster. I need to find better phrases to comment on things.
Okay, so it's been 2 weeks since we last recorded our episode, and we've learned a whole bunch of things in that time. The biggest thing, folks, the biggest thing I have learned is that somehow Michaela has 6 credit cards. I don't even know how that's possible, Michaela. Explain yourself.
I believe it's an American thing. We just, like, have a bunch of credit cards because if you choose a specific one, you can get more rewards points, which then, like, you can buy more things with them. So, yeah, you just, you know, rack up credit cards because then you can get different kinds of rewards depending on which ones you have.
And are you there, like, in Starbucks saying, oh, no, I don't use that card here, I use this card here, or do you just know?
I'm that kind of person who I really like personal finance, and because of that, I just know, typically. Like, I'll be like, oh, I'm at Starbucks, I should use this card because I get 3% cash back because we're at, like, a restaurant slash, like, it's a food drink kind of thing. Versus, well, if I'm at Apple, I have to use my Apple card because I get 3% cash back with that.
Obviously. Which is a lot of money, to be fair. In the Vision Pro, that's a fair chunk, right?
Yeah, it was about like $100-some for the Vision Pro.
Damn.
So you can buy, you know, what can we buy with $100 at Apple? Not much.
One AirPod?
Yeah. I can buy a lot of apps that I've been trying from everybody. That's what I can do.
Fair enough. Speaking of which, in the last episode, we tried a whole bunch of your apps, folks, and they've been sending in to us. And it's been great seeing the response. People have been saying, oh, we heard your feedback. We've increased this app, add version to this app, da, 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 da. People are listening and hopefully taking our feedback on board, which hopefully was very positive and useful. And we're seeing V2 and more of apps coming out. And we had a lovely email from the folks at the NASA JPL, who we featured last time, and they had the lovely Perseverance Rover Exploring Mars app. And they're also working on V2 with many UX improvements. And they've said, hopefully don't mind me telling you this because I think it's just so wonderful, they're going to include 3D Martian terrain so you can get the whole Martian experience, which sounds awesome.
Oh, that sounds great. I can't wait.
I can't wait. That is going to be good. And one last change I made, I want to mention real fast, because one thing I do again, 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 it really winds me up. I finally changed it. In the iOS simulator, if you press Command R, it starts a screen recording. Like, it makes a video of your screen. And very often I'm sort of flipping between Xcode and iOS simulator, Xcode, iOS simulator, da, 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 again and again and again. And occasionally I press Command R completely by accident, thinking I'm in Xcode to run the app. I'm actually simulator, so it actually starts recording, and I find out half an hour later I've made a video of my screen going nowhere, basically. So I changed the keyboard shortcut for simulator recording, which is possible in macOS. You can remap any key you want to in macOS. So now I have to press Option Command R to start recording. I never ever want to do, but I now it's very hard to do, which is much, much better. So I'm quite pleased with my small life improvement.
Apple on the Swift blog released a new post about on-device ML research with MLX and Swift. I didn't even know that this happened. Can we, like, subscribe to the Swift blog? Because I need to do that.
You know, I'm not sure we can. Oh, no, yes, we can. There's an RSS feed. Remember RSS?
I have never used RSS.
I know. It does seem a little bit 1999. Like the idea of having XML to read your things with. But yeah, it's still a thing. These feeds are still a thing. It's an Atom feed right now, apparently. You can subscribe. Would it help? I mean, I don't know. I worry a little bit that Apple still underuses the Swift.org homepage. There's not a great deal on there even today. And when there is something on there, it nearly always comes from Apple directly. There aren't a great deal of community things on there. And I don't really know why, because they've got this massive homepage and they've got a big Twitter following, and it's not very used often. So I'm not really sure what's happening there. But I'm glad to see something at least. I mean, it's obviously a nice improvement, and I guess machine learning will be a big thing at Dubdub this year. But I'd like to see it be used slightly more.
And this looks like, because I've only briefly read over this and I'm not big into machine learning, so I don't know much about it. Is this on, yeah, it's on device machine learning. So then that means it's more privacy focused too.
Which will undoubtedly be part of their big play. Whatever they do, there'll be some on-device component guaranteed. And that'd be interesting because right now we know we all have our little foibles with Siri sometimes, which tries to do things on device and often doesn't fully understand what you wanted. And so hopefully we're seeing a big, big push from, you know, Apple's PhDs ultimately to try and get this machine learning up to scratch. And hopefully, you know, actually cutting edge machine learning would be great. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where it's going. And I'm glad also they're working in public on this one because it's obviously be a big private side to it as well when they ship in DubDub. But right now it's public work, which is great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Another cool thing that was just announced was Apple is having an event for International Women's Day, which is called A Force Together. And the really cool thing about this is they're having it in multiple different countries in person this time. So last year they had this event that was only in person at Cupertino that I went to. But then this year, I'll be going again in Cupertino. But they also have events in Sydney, Shanghai, Singapore, Bengaluru, Tokyo, and Cupertino. So that's six different cities this time, as opposed to last year was maybe then like a trial run. So they only did one city in Cupertino. So then I'm guessing it was successful enough that they now want to do it in person all around the world.
Yes, yeah, so they've said it's a full day of in-person activities to celebrate and elevate women in app development. That means panels, sessions, mixes, and more. They've said you'll hear directly from Apple leaders and find out how to make great apps on Apple platforms and mingle with Apple staffers and developer colleagues. That's the official pitch. It sounds fantastic. There isn't one in London, which is a slight frustration, but it's still wonderful, wonderful thing to see. And if you can get to one of these folks in any of those cities, please do go along. It's a great, great thing to do.
Yeah, I'll be at the one in Cupertino. So if anybody is there, would love to say hi. And yeah, it was super fun last year. So I would definitely recommend. All the presentations are really interesting and different points that people make and just like Apple's perspective on how to build good apps. And this year too, I've seen at least in Cupertino, I'm actually not sure about the other cities, they're like extending the event as well so that there's like specific one-on-one sessions you can have like the other like one-on-one dev online events that they have, but they also will now have some one-on-one events in Cupertino too.
So our theme this episode, topically enough, is why you should attend conferences and meetups. And we just talked about the International Women's Day event in six different worldwide cities. That'd be a great example to start with. But there are lots of these. I mean, just in the conference space alone, there's well over a dozen significant events around the world taking place. I mean, where hundreds of folks turn up. And there's three in the UK alone. Never mind, you know, two in Italy, two in France, multiple in Germany. There's a lot of events out there to go to. And you know, I have said it before, I know Michaela said it before, we do encourage folks to go to events, just go and show up, be ready to learn. And there are so many reasons why, because well, at the very least, I think folks sometimes, you know, the folks, everyone has to learn at some point, right? You got to go and read blogs or perhaps listen to podcasts or buy books, whatever, do some learning to keep advancing and growing your knowledge, which is great. When you're doing that, you are kind of picking out what you want to learn, which is valuable. You're picking out, oh, I want to learn about Swift data or Swift concurrency or whatever. Da, da, da. And that's great. Love that. Self-directed learning is a good thing. But what conferences give you is serendipitous learning. You go there with an open mind and people give presentations on things you probably haven't even heard of or even thought of before. And there's this whole unknown unknowns thing, things you didn't even know you didn't even know, if that makes sense. they'll explain to you and you'll go, that's very interesting. I should go and do some more research on that. And you'll go away hopefully inspired to try new things, to keep learning and growing.
Yeah, for sure. Attending conferences is one of my favorite things, like personally, because I'm more extroverted. I love going and talking to new people. And that's what I really like about conferences even the most is meeting people, even more so than just what we're learning. But seeing the different things that we get to learn and just like hearing about all these technologies that you don't even know about just because like you haven't focused on it is just wild to see like what is even possible.
Yeah, and also just in a purely sort of commercial perspective, think about meetups in terms of job opportunities. You know, getting out there and meeting people, putting your name out there, making connections with people could be how you get your next job or your next step up to the next job or whatever. Making those connections counts. You could have a killer resume, but there's no door open to you. You don't know where the jobs are that would fit your work. It's very, very hard to find that work. And so if you can just say, hey, you work for such and such. Oh, you're hiring. That's interesting. I know someone, whatever. You can get these connections and you'll find that just knowing the right people is half the battle.
Yes, definitely. It makes a huge difference because then even if that person like isn't directly connected to like hiring though, they can at least like tell somebody, oh yeah, I talked to this person at a meetup. And because of that, somebody knows that your application exists as opposed to just being an application floating online with 100 other ones that like get automatically thrown out because of whatever applicant tracking system that they're using. So somebody now physically knows that your application is there and that can help you then get an interview at least.
Yes, for sure. But of course, the big question is, how do you start? Like, how do you actually find meetups to go to or places to go to? Where do you begin?
There's lots of places to begin. I would say first, there's like online conferences and there's also like in-person ones. So for online conferences, online events, I would say, because there's some conferences that are online, but some online events, there's this website called cococonferences.com, and they list all of the different like English speaking conferences that happen for iOS dev, Mac OS and all Apple platforms and everything. And that's getting constantly updated, and it's a GitHub repo. So you can also, if you know of a conference that's not on there, you can just make a pull request and post it to the web. Then we also have iOS Dev Happy Hour. That's the online conference that I run. So it's a monthly online meetup where you just chat with other developers. So it's more of a meetup rather than like specific conference. But we have like average about 100 people that go every month, and we have breakout rooms so you can talk to other people and actually like get to know everybody, as opposed to sometimes conferences are only sit and watch presentations and you don't actually get to mingle that much except between those presentations. So because of that, you still get to talk to people, but it's not as like, it's not a meetup sort of vibe. But then you can also look at meetup.com, which is an online website to find different meetup events for like all sorts of things. But I usually just like filter down through technology. And then sometimes I'll filter through like iOS specific or like Swift specific things and then see like what I can find through those kind of avenues just searching around. But then lastly, and this is harder because it's more about like knowing people that know people. But if you're on Twitter or social media, you can sometimes just like chat around with people and asking them, hey, do you know of any, I live in this area. Do you know of any conferences around here? And then those people can then chime in and let you know what's going on in your local area too.
Yeah. I think that's like quadruple whammy of things to think about all at once. It's interesting that each of those is so very different in terms of how you approach them and the kind of value they can give you. And I want to just focus on one particular thing, not because of Michaela's involvement, but because I think it's the easiest of them all, but still not easy, I would say, is the iOS Dev Happy Hour meetup. And this takes place every single month since the pandemic, right? And even though it's online, it can still be a little bit challenging at first because you think, well, I don't know anybody there. What if they ask me hard questions? I've been like half a dozen times now over the years, probably actually a bit more than that, but it's not so stressful, really. It's not that stressful. People are genuinely very welcoming. There are people you will recognize who will be there who you can say, oh, I've seen you on Twitter or Mastodon or your blog, whatever. You've got an opening to chat to people about what you've seen about their lives. And it's a great way in. And it builds that confidence, that builds that knowledge that you can make a contribution. You can hold a good conversation with people before you try and do it in person. If I know if folks are thinking, a conference is way too stressful, I have to talk to people and I hate that, whatever, start with iOS Dev Happy Hour. It's completely free every single month, and there's always scope to welcome new people there. So that's the easiest place to start. That being said, if you can go to an in-person conference, the Cocoa Conferences site, there's a whole bunch of them coming up soon. And I'm at a few of them. I mean, I know Mackenna's at a few too. There's one mention in there I want to pick out, which is Swiftcraft in the UK in Folkestone. This is a first-time conference, the first time running an event ever. And it's already gigantic. I mean, the speaker list they've attracted is through the roof quality. I mean, it's gigantic number of people coming to speak and pass on what they've learned and run workshops and presentations. Da, 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 da. It's genuinely going to be incredible. And that's their very first event. And so if you're thinking, hey, I fancy visiting the UK or whatever, this is your chance. It's just about an hour away from London, by the coast, by the water. It's in May. It'll be sunny and nice. I'm really looking forward to that event. The only problem is that I am going down there on Monday to do a workshop Tuesday. There's something else happening Wednesday. Thursday talks happen. Friday more talks happen. And so I'm coming down Monday and leaving Friday, which is like 5 days away from my kids, which is basically the most I really want to do if possible. And so I'm missing most of the Friday talks, which is very annoying.
Aww.
Because we have two people. We have Via Fairchild speaking, which is a great speaker, and Jessie Linden speaking. I haven't heard Jessie speak before. I heard her last talk was brilliant. So I'm annoyed that I can't hear those two delivering their talks. So, bah, humbug. Swiftcraft, if you're listening, move those two people forward to Thursday, please.
Yeah, I heard Via talk at Deep Dish Swift, and that was her very first talk, too. And
it was
phenomenal.
And great. It was phenomenal. It was a really good talk.
So I hope I make it to Swiftcraft. I would love to do that. My goal throughout this year is I'm probably going to try to go to as many conferences as I can because I can. And that's my goal throughout the whole year.
Because you can. That's it. No responsibilities. No life. It's fine. Yes, go for it, you know.
Live the dream of go through the conference circuit.
Yes. And the thing is, you know, Michaela obviously is now independent, she said previously. But if you're a company, if you're working for any company, if they have a training budget, even a small one, use it. Make sure every cent is being used. It's free money to go and learn something. And if you haven't got a training budget, ask for one. Even like a $500 a year training budget can go a very long way if you use it cleverly. And so just ask. You have nothing to lose.
Yeah, for sure. I did that with actually, I'm just remembering this, with my very first conference that I went to. Was a Microsoft conference. And the reason I went was because I asked. And this was actually before I was even in tech, which is why I was like surprised that they even let me go. But because I asked, I then was able to go to that conference. And then from there, I learned like technologies that then I did take and were able to use like in my job too, which was super helpful.
Did you mention last time you did C# previously? Did I dream that?
That's right. I did C#.
Okay. It's exciting. What for?
It was a special program.
That sounds like you're in witness protection, Michaela. How bad was your code?
There was one branch. That's how bad. Yeah. If you've never gone to a conference or any iOS dev meetup before, it's definitely scary for the first time because you don't know anybody. You don't know how it works. That's just scary. So because of that, you can always go, like, for iOS Dev Happy Hour, you can definitely go and just lurk. Like, just go to the meetup, don't have your camera on, don't turn your mic on, just kind of absorb what does this meetup do, because like I said, there's like 100 people that come. There's definitely some like reoccurring people that like we recognize every single month, but there's always new people that come in too. And that's always fun, so you get to see how everything works. But if you're not ready to like speak up and talk to other people, you can always just kind of lurk there and just see what's going on. And that's totally fine for us as well. So for online meetups and online events, that's kind of like a good thing to sort of start out with because nobody knows you're kind of there anyways. So like, you don't, nobody points out that you're there or you're not supposed to like be in a certain place. With online events, you can kind of just be there and just take it all in for the first step.
And what you'll find is by doing that, by just listening to people, you'll build up confidence. You'll feel more confident saying, oh yeah, I knew that already, or I didn't know that already. You're seeing how it's done. You're seeing folks take their first steps in the public space, and it makes you feel more confident yourself. So just doing that for 3 months, 4 months, or even 6 months, doesn't matter how long it takes, will make you feel more confident. And then if you go to a breakout room, which they do have these breakout rooms, you can say, oh yeah, I heard you speak last month. Or if you go to one of the, you know, it's hard to get to these elite events, the iOS Dev Happy Hour event they have in a Dub, it sells out very quickly, folks. It really does. You could say, oh, yeah, I've met you at the Happy Hour. You know somebody already.
Mm-hmm. And what I really love about it too is it's international. So we do switch the time here and there. We adjust it a little bit because of course we can't accommodate like all 25, 26 time zones that exist in the world. So we try to shift it a little bit. And I know because this event that we're having this Saturday, which the podcast won't be out by then, but we get different people from different time zones when we shift it back and forth here and there. So sometimes there's people from Australia, other times there's then people from Tokyo, in different countries in Europe, and just all around the world, which is, I think, probably one of my favorite parts of that.
Yeah. And just in case, I know it's unlikely, just in case Dave DeLong's listening, he's like the resident community Apple date expert. I think, folks, there are about 40 time zones in the world.
Oh my gosh.
There's like beyond how many you'd think reasonable number of time zones in the world.
That's excessive. Why? Why do we do this to ourselves?
It's true.
And then moving on to in-person events, meetups, and online conferences, they are scary. And there's like, it's kind of like public speaking. You kind of, the only way to practice it is to do it. So it's like, no matter how much you mock public speaking, like, you don't get that all the anxiety until you actually do it in front of other people. So because of that, what I like to do is have like three questions in my back pocket that you can always go up and kind of ask anybody at the conference. And they'll respond. So it's like your little small talk, like kickoff before you end up finding common ground to talk to other people. So one of them, classic, you can always ask people, what is the weather or what the weather is like in whatever location you're at if you're not from there? Because then, you know, start talking about the weather. What's the rain like? That whole conversation of how it goes. But it's also it is interesting when you're just someplace you've never been before. The weather is like the first thing you notice. But then also after that, a classic one you can always ask people after like all the talks have started and so you're in some kind of intermission or just between talks is ask somebody what they thought of the last talk, if they've heard of whatever technology or if they've used it. And you can say you're a beginner at that or you haven't heard of it or, oh, that talk was really cool. I like the point that they made about this, this, and this. The other person who may be more experienced then can chime in and say, oh yeah, that's definitely the best way. Or they might give criticism and say, oh no, they do it this way, but I like this other way. And then either way, you just learned one or two new things just from asking somebody, oh, did you like that last talk? Or what did you think about it? And then another one you can also ask people is, what talk are you excited to see? Because when people go to conferences, sometimes they go to see a specific speaker or to learn about a specific topic. And that's how they chose to go to that conference. So asking people what talk are they interested in seeing, and then you can look forward to something new that you haven't thought about. And then what's really cool is at some of the other indie conferences, like Deep Dish Swift, which is centered more around indie developers, you can ask people what apps are they working on. So are they currently working on some kind of side project? How is that going? Do they build in public? Like, ask just about somebody's own app because people will love to talk about themselves or they love to talk about their own app. So you can always ask people, what is it that you're working on? And just go into a whole conversation of like specific indie challenges that you have that you don't get like with corporate applications or with 9-to-5 kind of apps.
For sure. I think I mentioned it previously, but at SwiftConf in Cologne last year, I met one of the developers for the Crunchyroll app. I'm like, Crunchyroll, I love Crunchyroll. And then just filed a bunch of bug reports to his face.
I've done
so
that.
I use it a lot. I know, so I felt a bit mean actually, but you know. Anyway, one last thing I want to mention before we wrap up. We've said it before, but this is the truest of true advice you'll ever hear for going to conferences. If you know no one there at all, go and speak to one of the speakers. They will always, always, always love to hear questions, feedback, whatever, about their talk, about what they do. If you know someone from their blog or their podcast, in our case, whatever, YouTube channel, go and say, hey, I love your YouTube channel. It's just, it's an easy way in. And every single speaker would love to hear from you.
This episode's question, what's the best moment of your career? And I absolutely love all the responses we got. And I love how like wide variety they are in that there's so many things that are just special to all of us. And seeing just all the stories, because we had one post that was like 5 threads post long of the moment of their career and like all the backstory behind it. And I absolutely love that. But let's kick it off with some of the best moments of people's careers, which is first from Daniel Lewis, is my first accepted App Store submission. This is the best feeling because especially if you get rejected for the first time, then finally, like, getting it through App Store review is the best. And Danielle mentioned that she has her very first one, but also, if anyone didn't know, she has had 4 apps in the App Store since that first one. And throughout this whole time, that's only within, like, a few months, too. I've been following her on Twitter and seeing all of her different posts, but that is amazing.
Yes, folks, listen, if you do not follow Danielle on Twitter, she's DLewisDev. This woman is going to be an absolute superstar. The rate she is growing, the rate she is learning, the rate she is shipping, genuinely astonishing. You want to follow her.
We'll put her in the show notes for sure, so you can easily just tap on her name, follow her. And then we also have Stefan Kopmans, who released his first app where Swift was a hobby for a few years, and then now he released his app, and then when he got the first €2 of somebody actually paying for his work, that feeling is incredible. And then also we have Davut, who made his first app with friends, and then just building something that other people find useful is the best feeling.
So Stefan's point is, it's hard to explain, but it's really, really true. It's when you've shipped your app to the App Store, 1.5 billion people from around the world can now see and buy the App Store app. And it becomes, obviously the money's great, but it's not about the actual income, at least not initially. You're like, damn, this has worked. My skills, people are valuing my skills somewhere in a different country entirely, probably, are buying my apps and enjoying my apps and getting value for my apps and paying for them, whatever, subscribing. It feels incredible. Every single time it feels incredible. And you'll find yourself, you know, when you are genuinely in the zone, when you are loving it, because you start checking for the App Store trends financial reports shipping every day. You're like, checking it. There's an exact time about when it lands. You can see it and see what it looks like. And it just feels so good seeing $5, $10, whatever it is.
Next up, we have Roddy Moonrow, who, after being stuck in a test automation role that he didn't enjoy very well, after interviewing around for an iOS dev role, he was offered not one, but 2 jobs in a single day, which also happened to be his birthday.
That is definitely a high point right there. What I would say, and obviously he didn't sound very happy in the role he had, some of the best developers I've known have come from QA. You know, they've learned how to break apps first, then learned how to build apps. And they become so much more aware of their code, of writing good tests and so forth. It makes, I think, for a better developer personally.
Yeah, for sure. Because you know how to, like you said, make things work and then also then go and like push the limits to breaking them. So then when you go around to actually writing an app, you think about all the ways that people can then break your code. So you try to prevent all those too.
Yeah.
Amy mentions knowing lots of the iOS developer community and workplaces are super accepting and safe for different people. Unfortunate caveat that there is a large amount of work still to go with diversity and inclusion. And I fully agree that the tech community is a very inclusive community and how accepting everybody is of people from different backgrounds and different personal aspects about them. That's one of the things I absolutely love.
Yeah, I found it sometimes depends on the audience, at least for me. Last year in, I think it was May, I gave a talk at Deep Dish Swift. And I mentioned just in passing in the talk that I was gay. And after like 8 or so years of doing talks, that was the first one I ever had negative reviews back for. People complained my talk was too left field. And that was hard, given it was a personal talk. It was a closing keynote kind of talk, not technical talk. But then on Mastodon, I talked about one of the sort of anti-LGBT comments I received. I had a massive wall of support in the replies, which was very encouraging. And so sometimes it's a bit hit and miss, but she's right. There's definitely a lot more work to happen here.
Mm-hmm. I find it's very, like you said, hit and miss, and it's very, I don't know if polarizing is the right word. It's either way. It's either people are very supportive or it's the complete opposite. There's like sometimes not something that's kind of in the middle, iffy. It's just one or the other. So I completely agree. We have lots of work to do. But overall, I think the community is way more supportive. And I hope everybody listening is also very supportive. And if you see somebody struggling, reach out and say you support them.
Yeah, and actually, I think we should be very lucky in that respect that Apple are leading the way. They're very, very openly proud of everyone, and that's great to see.
I love that.
And speaking of which, actually, literally this Saturday as we record this, it's Thursday now recording this, and Saturday I'm flying out to Detroit. I'm spending the whole week with the mentors at the Apple Developer Academy in Detroit, in Michigan, working with them there as part of Apple's larger racial equity and justice movement, because they've worked so hard to reach out to a whole bunch of people who have historically been underrepresented in our community and bringing them in, getting them involved, and doing their very, very best to create meaningful change and expand opportunities, folks, too, which is just so important.
Oh, I love that.
I've been looking at the Apple weather app thinking, oh, wow, it's really cold in Detroit.
See, talking about the weather is a hot topic.
You're right. Also, and this is maybe a random observation, I've met so many Apple folks who've been to the University of Michigan.
Huh.
It feels like the number one hire in Apple from what I can tell.
Interesting.
So we've heard from a few folks already what their best moment of their career was. Michaela, you want to give us yours?
Yeah, I was trying to think because sometimes you're kind of like, oh, this doesn't feel like a best moment because you do stuff that happens later. So it kind of almost like washes out what you had felt at that time. But I was thinking one of the best moments for me was when I did my very first like talk in front of other people. I was at the company that I had worked at then, and they just did monthly little tech talks. And so I was speaking in front of like 100 different people, and that was absolutely terrifying. And the reason I did it was because I was trying to push myself out of my comfort zone. And I was like, okay, nothing like speaking in front of 100 people of your coworkers that you see every day. So let's go and do it. So that's what I did. And it was great that I, for one, ended up absolutely loving it, which was wild to me because I used to hate public speaking. And so the fact that I loved it is just wild to me. But with that, I also got really good feedback on my talk because I talked about Git and just how to use it, what it is. I got a lot of feedback from all of my coworkers, like in the IT department. They were like, you did really good and made it entertaining for a talk that typically is kind of like a dry and sort of boring subject. Mm. So I think that probably is what ended up inspiring me to then talk about like, or give conference talks starting like all around the world. So after that, since then, I've now done like 4 different conference talks, all in different countries. And it all started because I tried to push myself out of my comfort zone.
There you go.
So back to all the listener replies. Owen Matthews mentions when the app he was working on for 4 years was featured on the front page of the App Store in the News Apps We Love section. Yes, being featured on the App Store is amazing. And that is something I also aspire to have. So congrats, Owen. That's great.
It is great. And in fact, Owen went on to say that the app's not on the store anymore because although the app itself wasn't a big success, it became part of the resume that got them hired at Apple, which I love. Great success story right there. And one extra thing, folks, I've said it a few times before, but I think I can't say it enough. You can submit your app to Apple to be featured on the App Store. It's literally a form you fill in, you saying, hey, I think you should showcase my app. So if you have a new app or a game or a big app update or a good in-app event happening, tell them. There's a form to fill out about who did it, what's happening, and let them know ahead of time, like ideally 3 weeks or 4 weeks ahead of time, and it much, much increases your chances of being featured in the App Store.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that exists. I have that bookmarked probably in multiple different places, and like it's somewhere in my browser tabs, but I absolutely forget that exists like every time. Put it like as your, in a list of like your launch checklist, add that.
Damn right.
Anthony Engel mentions that he was fortunate enough to get an internship at Apple, and that was an incredible experience and very excited to start full-time once they graduate this semester. So congrats, that is great.
And that's one more person, folks, we can personally send our feedback reports to try and get them figured out by Apple at some point in the future. No, just kidding, Anthony. Congratulations, it's a great thing to do. You know, even just interning there, you're going to learn a lot and make great contacts. And I'm glad it's turned into a full-time job.
And Daniel Yilg is living his best moment right now, running a coding shop with his best friend. For anyone who doesn't know, Daniel is the co-founder and lead developer of Telemetry Deck, which is a privacy-focused analytics framework that is super easy to implement and get started with. And I use it for all of my apps from now on because of how anonymous and privacy-focused it is. That's what I really love because you can just get so many stats just right off the bat with a single line of code.
And Just recently, folks, I got the chance to collaborate with Michaela just briefly on some projects. She was just starting out the project, and we started the code, and so far, there was basically no code, but there was telemetry deck already in there. That's how much she loves telemetry deck. I love it.
Yep. Got to have my analytics before I have a functioning app. Okay, so we've heard from all the listeners what their best moments are, but Paul, we haven't heard yours yet. So please tell us, what is the best moment in your career?
I was thinking earlier, ahead of time, about how long I've been programming for, and it's about 29 years now. I've been doing this almost 3 decades, Michaela. And so picking out like the single greatest thing took a bit of thinking. And I spent the last 15 years working with Apple platforms almost exclusively. So obviously that's sort of like closest to my memory right now, biggest in my brain. And during that time alone, I've written software for General Electric, for Xerox, for UBS, for Apple and more. And there've been so many highlights along the way. But I think when I look back, the thing I'm most proud of was one of the fundraisers I did a couple of years ago. Because two girls from Afghanistan had reached out to the school my kids attended, asking for help. Now, you might know, listeners, that girls in Afghanistan aren't allowed to attend school past the age of sort of 11 or 12 or so. And they were asking for help to come to England, to come to my kids' school and study there instead to try and get education. So I ran some advanced Swift UI workshops to help raise money to support these two girls. And so many folks bought tickets. We raised over $25,000 to fund these two kids to come over and study. And, you know, I've helped 100,000 people learn Swift UI with 100 days program, something like 700,000 people a month come to my site to learn. But still, I feel most proud of helping those two girls. They get a full education now when previously that would have been impossible.
I love that. And I think with that, it's so much more real because like you knew who those two people were that you were like very directly helping, more so than just a single site visitor feels more anonymous. But I love that.
Is it awesome?
It is awesome. I'm a podcaster. I need to find better phrases to comment on things.
Need more words, Michaela.
We don't have that many words in programming. We just have to name variables.
True.
And also another listener we had was Tim, who mentioned that gaining the power, knowledge, and capability of making things accessible for others. His girlfriend is almost completely blind, so he made apps to play a game together with helping clothing in their daughter's closet and more. And to him, that is the most rewarding.
And again, that's an example of where helping one specific person can feel significantly better than helping 100,000 folks who you may never meet. And it's true. I mean, obviously, you know, both matter. But when it's a particular thing, you know, a situation really needs an exact solution, you can get alongside them, really nail it and then hone it and see the results of your work. It does feel very, very good indeed.
Aww.
And there's one to end on from Paul Burford. This is a long one, folks, but this is definitely worth listening to. The TLDR summary was, Paul said, convincing Steve Jobs to unfire me 2 hours after he fired me. And I was like, Paul, you can't leave it there. We need the full story. And very kindly, he posted a sort of 3-post response with the full story here. Here we go. So Paul said, in 1992, I was a systems engineer for Next Europe. We had a team meeting with Steve Jobs in Paris, and Jobs announced we were going to make an Intel version of Next Step for PCs. Next Step, by the way, is where we get the NS prefix for lots of our code in Swift and Objective-C. However, our next-gen Next machines would be PowerPC. And Steve said that PowerPC would kick Intel's ass. Paul disagreed, arguing the process improvements and so on would keep them ahead. Steve was obviously getting annoyed at his persistence and closed the meeting. And as we were leaving the room, Paul saw Steve talking to his immediate boss. So he says, I looked outside and sure enough, my boss came out and Steve had instructed him to let me know I was fired. This was a huge blow as I love Next and I just purchased my first home for my young family. So instead of returning to his room, he decided to go to the bar. He thought it'd be a good place to get the courage to call his wife and tell her what happened. After a couple of hours, he said, I started seeing my colleagues coming past on the way to the coach that would take everyone out for dinner. It was obvious my change in status was known to all as I was avoided like the plague. About 20 minutes after everyone had gone out, Jobs comes out on his way to join everyone for dinner. He sees Paul in the bar and comes over. Jobs asked him fairly forcefully, why had you been so persistent? And Paul says, I had nothing to lose and was happy to explain my thoughts. We talked for about 10 to 20 minutes. As the conversation ended, Steve said, I don't agree with you, but I can see you are thinking about what's best for the company, so you're not fired. Let's go to dinner and talk some more. We joined everyone on the coach, sat at the same table and spent a couple of hours discussing the future for Next. It was a pretty awesome evening in the end. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Again, thank you so much for listening. Please leave a review on your favorite podcast app. And of course, tell your friends to subscribe as well. Next time, our open ballot is going to be, what do you do to make your app more accessible? Let us know when we tweet it in about a week or so. Until then, take care, folks.
See ya.
It was a pretty awesome evening in the end.